Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, we are absolutely loaded. It's a Wednesday. This in Los Angeles is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, live on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, right here on FS1. Joy Taylor is joining me. We are jammed today. One of my favorite guests, Gautam Chopra. Deepak Chopra's son is a filmmaker, a documentarian. He joins us last hour today. He has got great stuff. There's a new documentary with Steph Curry that's out that is amazing. So I'm all fired up for that. Nick Wright, Bucky Brooks, who I love, NFL draft guy, Mark Medina. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. Good morning.
Good morning. I got great stuff today. Watch the Rockets, Warriors, Bucks, and the Celtics. Let me start with this. It is very easy in the world we live in today, I can speak from experience here, to get distracted. We got our devices. We got this. We got options. There's never been more stores to shop at. My neighborhood's got 12 different grocery stores. You can go organic. You can go boutique. You can go big. It is options, options, options. It is very easy to get distracted. Stay focused. New England's focused. Alabama's focused. Focused. Warriors focused. Don't get it twisted. Don't be distracted by the flopping and the analytics and the letter by the Rockets to the NBA. And Scott Foster, do not be distracted. This series between the Warriors and the Rockets, and it's over, is about Kevin Durant is now significantly better than James Harden. Kevin Durant is the best basketball player in the world and playing his best basketball now. At the end of the year, he didn't play a lot of minutes. He scaled back. He's rested. He is more efficient and better now in May. James Harden, who was destroying the world in January, once again comes to the playoffs, averaged 36 a game, regular season. Now it's down in the 20s, and he's not shooting the same percentage. I don't want to hear about James Harden's eye. Steph Curry last night had a dislocated finger. It was gross. It was turned sideways. Okay, long before that injury to Harden's eye, the Rockets were a mess and were down by 10. What I'm about to say, I'm not saying it's true. I'm asking you a question. Is it fair to say this? James Harden has become a better version, a better shooting version of Westbrook. Unbelievably relentless in the regular season. And then he kind of is a different guy, good, not spectacular in the playoffs. This is not a one-time thing. Last year, James Harden, 45% shooter in the regular season, 37% on threes, shot 41% in the playoffs, and 29% on threes in the playoffs. Harden and Westbrook, when the awards get the glamour, get the attention, spectacular, relentless, dominate January, and here we go again. Westbrook's out. Harden doesn't look quite as dynamic. There are NBA players, four come to mind, that appear to be better in the playoffs. LeBron James, he picks his spots in the regular season, not out to win awards. Kawhi Leonard rests lots in the regular season. Kevin Durant scales back, has nothing to prove in the regular season, doesn't try to play for minutes and awards in the regular seasons. And Kyrie Irving, who got heat for it, but this year missed some games, didn't play as hard in the regular season. It is easy to get distracted. Scott Foster, analytics, referees, everybody's picking on Houston and they're flopping it. Kevin Durant's better than Harden by a lot. And Kevin Durant, here we go in May, is playing the best basketball I've ever seen him play. You can blame Scott Foster. You can blame everybody. You can point fingers. Kevin Durant's always been great. He's the greatest version of himself. James Harden's always been good, became great, and now is back to being really, 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 really good in the playoffs. Remember, game one, Harden had a chance to hit the shot and missed it. And my argument would be that was their moment. Remember, the Warriors got pushed to six games by the Clippers, had played Friday night late, and then had to fly up home and play an early Sunday game. You had the Warriors. That was the moment. And Harden missed because he misses more now than he does in the regular season. Don't be distracted. All right, I want to shift to this. I'd like the camera squarely on me right now. Thank you. I think Kevin Durant would be out of his mind to leave the Warriors. Coach, former player, Steph Clay, Bob Myers, new arena, Silicon Valley, California weather. I don't get it. He wouldn't make any more money in New York. I think it would feel like LeBron going to the Lakers. He'd be great and have a bunch of average young guys around him that nobody else wants. I hope he doesn't go. I like this Kevin Durant. But let me defend Kevin Durant leaving for a second. Kevin Durant has been arguably the best basketball player in the world for 10 years. I say LeBron, but he's a better offensive player, I think, than LeBron. But his entire life of basketball, Kevin Durant has finished second. He did not go number one in the draft. He was number two. Kevin Durant went behind Greg Oden. Really? Then he goes to Oklahoma City. And Sam Presti puts his arms around Westbrook over Kevin Durant. He's number two. Really? And then he goes to Golden State, where he's clearly the best player, but he'll never be as popular as Steph. He's number two. Really? And then for 10 years, despite his dominance, there's LeBron. He's number two. Really? Even at Nike, his contract, second best. And I'm not saying Kevin Durant thinks about what I'm going to say, but let me ask you, when it comes to iconic stuff, 25, 30, 40, 50 years later, it usually works in groups of four. In the NBA, Magic saved the league, MJ made it global, LeBron made it mobile, and Steph revolutionized it. Kevin Durant, he's not on the Mount Rushmore. He's just great. It even works that way with great centers. Bill Russell was the most accomplished, most titles. Wilt was the most statistically dominant. Kareem was the most unstoppable, and Shaq was the most physically dominant. Akeem, often better than Shaq. He's just great. It works that way in all sorts of fields. I've worked in radio my entire life. Marconi creates it. Paul Harvey's the first star. Rush Limbaugh saves AM radio. Howard Stern's the ultimate bad boy. I was an Imus fan. But does he just qualify as great? Generally works in that Mount Rushmore thing we talk about, fours. 25, 30 years from now at a bar, not my bar, a bar, I won't be here. Magic saved it. Michael made it global. LeBron made it mobile. Steph made it a three-ball league. Will we just say, God damn, Kevin Durant was unbelievable. Akeem was unbelievable. It's even in music. Individual stars, Sinatra, Elvis, Michael Jackson, Elton John, Whitney. Usually don't get to a fifth or a sixth. It's groups of four. I look at Kevin Durant, and I think he's nuts to leave. But he always seems like he finishes second, and not only second, but he's better than the first. He was better than Greg Oden. He's better than Steph. He shouldn't have the number two current deal at Nike. He's no longer second to LeBron. He shouldn't be number two to Westbrook. Like, I get it. I get when you are the world's best, I can understand a guy thinking, man, would somebody finally say, you the man? I don't get it, but if he went to New York, unlike LeBron's foray to Los Angeles, which has been at best a mess, and he won in New York, maybe then he makes the mountain. But I'm watching him last night, and the gap between him and even the amazing James Harden is substantial. We had the Warriors beat writer, one of them, Marcus Thompson, on our show about 3 weeks ago. And one of the questions I asked him, I said, like, he's smart, right? Like, he's going to give the Warriors a final chance to sell him, right? Here's what Marcus said about KD.
I'm not buying that at the last moment he's sitting at a meeting with somebody and he can't be swayed. Either way, to stay or go.
Because that's his personality.
Yeah. He could think it's done right now, whether that's staying or going. I still think later on, like, he can be swayed. Like, he's a guy, he feels everything. He sits in the room. He's present. He's got to weigh this stuff. We still have three or four more series, if they win a championship, of data to insert into this equation, right? Like, I don't know if, even if he thinks he knows the answer, I don't think he knows the answer. I'm not buying it.
I think that decision, the more I think about it, is more complicated and confusing and tougher than I at first thought.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So I feel like, and I don't want to be condescending here, but I feel like we kind of have to, as an audience, we like what Milwaukee's doing, but we have to teach them how this thing works because they haven't been relevant for 30 years in the NBA. So I don't want to be condescending, but this is sort of how it works. A, regular season dominance does not equal playoff dominance, especially for young, eager teams. That's the way it works. So Milwaukee, you're not going to roll everybody like you did in the regular season. You're young, you're eager. The regular season seeding, it means a lot. You haven't been good forever. Secondly is, once a team comes into your building, like a Celtic team with banners and stuff, and they roll you in game one, game two is yours. They did all they wanted to do. They got a split. Remember, these two teams met last year in the playoffs. Road team didn't win any games. Okay. Boston's whole goal, get a game and get the you-know-what out of town. They did last night, barely needed to watch. And I watched, but that was Milwaukee's game. In the NFL and in college football in general, the intensity of the regular season and postseason, pretty close. Got to play hard every game, every series, every play. NBA, the intensity, there is a Grand Canyon gap, regular season to playoffs. So last night, Boston got rolled. Milwaukee's, the power outage is over. All sorts of Twitter talk, a lot of internet yesterday. Last night was Milwaukee's game. Go ask a sports bettor. You bet Milwaukee. That's their game. That's the way the league works. Boston went into your place. And Kyrie, by the way, I'm getting this. Kyrie last night struggled. Okay, and then Chris Middleton. Colin, you said Chris Middleton's not a number two. Not in a championship team. He's a three, maybe a four. He's Klay Thompson. It is, except not as good defensively. And Chris Middleton's had a really good game last night. So what? In college basketball, you can be a one-game superstar. Sudden death. In the NBA, I want three more of those. I want Chris Middleton to be great and shoot 60% on threes three more times. Then we'll talk. He's not an all-star in the West. He's an all-star in the East. So was John Wall. There's a big difference. And by the way, I'm going to bet that Kyrie does not have another stinker like last night over Chris Middleton having three more games like last night. This is the way, not trying to be condescending here, but I said this, Joy was here. I've been saying this. When you get young teams, Milwaukee, Denver, that don't have a lot of playoff experience, the regular season means a lot. Seeding means a lot. Boston, by the way, this year, seeded fourth. They don't look like a number four seed, do they? By the way, Golden State last year, last 17 games, regular season, 10 and, what was it last year at the end of the season? Were they 10 and 17, their last 27 or something? Warriors were terrible at the end of last regular season. I don't have the numbers in front of me. They were terrible. They got rings. They got titles. They got net worth. They got brands. They don't care. There's nothing really to say about last night other than the winner in this 3 or 4 days in Milwaukee was Boston. God, by the way, Kyrie Irving, everybody's like, yeah, Kyrie Irving. What do you got to say now, Kyrie Irving? Here's what he's got to say now.
This is the first time you're in the playoffs as a lone all-star on your team, especially after a game like this. What is the extra burden there, and how do you intend to deal with it?
There's no extra burden. This is what I signed up for. This is what Boston traded for me for, so this is what you live for. So, you know, basketball is fun when it comes like this, when you have to respond. And, this is a type of basketball you want to be playing at this time of year.
Kyrie Irving will go home, and I assure you, will play really, really good basketball. It's not to say Chris Middleton's not good. He's an all-star in the East. But I'm going to go with Kyrie Irving is going to be huge in this series and will not be marginalized and will be more dependable over time. This is not March Madness. You got to do it four times in a series to win.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I am really obsessed about this story, about Kevin Durant leaving the Warriors. I think it would be a huge mistake. I think he's the best basketball player in the world. And I say this, I'm not comparing myself to anybody. I'm just telling you, I've moved cross-country four times. I get the move thing. I've left six-figure jobs, seven-figure jobs, great jobs. I've left. I'm good at the leaving thing, and I'm good at summarizing the leaving thing. Here's what you try not to do. Leave for less money and worse management. That's what I've tried to never do. Okay, try to get better management, more money, more years. I get it. Put aside your ego, your vanity. I want to be this, this, this. Move to better management. Maybe move for a little more security money. Move for better teammates, you know, better coworkers. That stuff I'm all in on. Move because I want to be the man. Be very careful about that because you can end up being the only man. Sometimes you want to be the man. Kobe, Shaq, Kobe wanted to be the man. And then Shaq left and Kobe was, the only man. Then he got Pau Gasol. And they won again. So there's a story out that Kevin Durant would consider the Nets, blah, blah, blah. It's interesting. I want to talk about LeBron for a second. So LeBron has moved a bunch. So let's go look at LeBron's three moves and examine why LeBron James left each time. Because Kevin Durant has watched a lot of how LeBron has done his business. That is indisputable. They used to train early in their careers. Kevin Durant, smart guy. He's watched what LeBron's done. So let's think and examine LeBron's first move from Cleveland to Miami. Why did he do that? Because he felt trapped. He didn't like the owner. He didn't trust the franchise. They couldn't get him any good stars. So LeBron went Cleveland to Miami because he felt kind of stifled, kind of trapped. He didn't trust the owner. He thought Miami, he could finally play with guys who could play near his level. So he left. Now, why did he go back to Cleveland? Well, that was to restore his image. There was some guilt or something there, but mostly LeBron wanted to restore his image. He didn't like being the villain. He wanted to go back to Cleveland. He wanted to restore his image. He also won, and that was cool. And then why did LeBron leave for Los Angeles? Well, it was clearly not the best roster. It wasn't the hottest team. He could have gone to Houston. He could have gone to Philadelphia. He could have gone... business reasons. I don't think there's any question now. It certainly wasn't the best basketball roster, not even close, just a bunch of kids. So in review, why did he leave? He left first because he was stifled. He left second to restore his image. And he left third for business. So let's look at Kevin Durant, who has watched LeBron's moves. Why did Kevin Durant leave Oklahoma City? Oh. He felt stifled, trapped. Oklahoma City has a certain brand. Sam Presti used to work for Popovich. He wanted to be a big star. Billboards around the stadium. They wouldn't let him. Westbrook, hard to play with. Wasn't getting the quality efficiency shots. Much like LeBron's first move, different people, but he felt trapped. If he leaves now Golden State to New York, what will be the reason? Oh, there's actually two. To repair his image, I can do it myself, and for business. Isn't that interesting? LeBron left stifled, restore image, business. Kevin would be leaving stifled, repair image, business. The difference is he could accomplish two of those things with one move. New York would restore his image. Oh! You don't need other great players. And there's no question. Much as I like San Francisco, winning in New York does feel big. It's not like I don't think winning in Golden State feels small, but there is a New York component here. I mean, would we know who Phil Simms is? Eli Manning or bigger? Derek Jeter could be all that and play with the Royals. He wouldn't be Derek Jeter. So I just wanted to throw that out there. is that as crazy as the move is in my worldview for Kevin Durant, it's got a lot of similarities to LeBron. Kendrick Perkins played with Durant. He talked about those OKC days yesterday on Speak for Yourself.
He left OKC and he was able to be KD. He was able to be outspoken. And there's no knock on the Thunder organization, but they mimic the Spurs organization. Sam Presti grew up under Greg Popovich. So their culture is a lot different. They run their organization the same way. And so when KD left to go to Golden State, now y'all able to see KD speak out and say different things and go about handling, you know, things the way he need to handle it because he's able to do that. He has the freedom now.
But what he doesn't have is the restoration of his image. He still gets ripped for joining. And business-wise, he's got his stocks. He's got all his equities and investments in Silicon Valley. He wants to go as big as you can go in New York.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
There was an article out today. Are the Cowboys planning a future without Ezekiel Elliott? So the Dallas Cowboys did draft two running backs. They did. They drafted two running backs. It did not appear to be a position of need. Of all the positions to draft, that doesn't seem like it would be a priority. Tony Pollard for Memphis was good, but the second best running back for Memphis, and Mike Weber for Ohio State, good early in his career, faded, had some injuries. But the question remains, is this a plan eventually to not be beholden to Ezekiel Elliott? Here's what's interesting about the Cowboys. They have drafted so well recently, they may be trapped. So remember, they're already paying three of their offensive linemen a lot of money. And they have to pay Jalen Smith in 1 year. He is as athletic as any linebacker in this league, and he's a free agent in a year. And I haven't even gotten to the big four. Got to pay Zeke, got to pay Dak, got to pay Amari Cooper, and you just paid DeMarcus Lawrence. There simply isn't enough money for Dallas. There isn't. I'm not saying they're moving off Zeke. But DeMarcus Lawrence got his money, and my gut feeling is Dak is getting his. And also, Dak was a better quarterback with Amari Cooper. Are the Cowboys sending a little message? I don't know if they are, but I do think you should think about this for a second. Did the Dallas Cowboys watch the Los Angeles Rams, who, by the way, Stan Kroenke and Jerry Jones are best buds? And did Jerry watch the Rams give Todd Gurley that massive contract, see his injury? And Gurley and Zeke, in my opinion, are the two best backs in the league, and they're very similar. They can block, they can run, they can catch the ball. They're just workhorses. But do you feel as good about that Todd Gurley contract today if you're a Rams fan? I don't. I don't. And ask yourself this question. What would Belichick do? He wouldn't give the running back a fortune. What would Philadelphia do? They would not give their running back a fortune. What would the Steelers do? Historically well-run. Let Le'Veon Bell walk. What would the Saints do? Let Mark Ingram go. I'm just saying. The Cowboys are a little bit of a victim of their own excellence. They have drafted so well in the last 3-4 years. They have stars. You got to pay all these guys. You got Dak, DeMarcus Lawrence. You're paying the offensive line three guys. You're not going to pay Jalen Smith. Did you watch Jalen Smith last year? Van Der Esch and Jalen Smith are the best linebacking duo, the best young linebacking duo by a notch in the league. Jalen Smith is off the hook. I mean, he is unbelievable. He is a sideline to sideline. I mean, he's like, there's an Urlacher except faster look to him. He's a Hall of Fame talent. So I do think, I don't know if it was a message, but I do think the Cowboys looked at the Rams and thought, man, when you got to pay a bunch of dudes and you're paying your Aaron Donald, And you got to have to pay Goff. You know, you start looking around, and that big running back contract, when Gurley got hurt last year, you're like, you're not blaming Gurley. You're like blaming the position. Like, that's the reality of that position. So I do think it's something to keep your eye on.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I've been waiting for this interview all day. Gautam Chopra is an author and a filmmaker, award-winning filmmaker. He did Tom vs. Time, obviously. He's got a company with Michael Strahan and Tom Brady, the Religion of Sports, sports media company. And he dives deep. He goes to the house. He goes inside the head of these stars. And the latest is Steph Curry. Stephen vs. the Game, it's called, or Stephen vs. the Game, out tomorrow on Facebook. Here's a clip from it. This is Steph talking about Tiger Woods and what he's impressed by. Here it is.
I've never seen like a killer instinct like that where you know you're the best, but still like searching for perfection. Like he changed his swing even though he won like six straight tournaments and three majors out of 4 years, or does like the Tiger Slam and then changes the swing again because he feels like he can get better and more efficient. Like that was like an inspiration in terms of never really being satisfied.
And we welcome in Gautam Chopra. What are the challenges? The NFL's culture is system over player.
Yeah.
There's almost like, hey, Tom, if you do a documentary, you're giving up secrets that Belichick will yell at you about. In the NBA, it's more star-driven. This stuff is understood. Was it easier to do the Steph Curry than the Tom Brady documentary?
I mean, in that way, yes, just because barrier to entry in some ways is tougher in the NFL. But I would say, you know, one of the main challenges with Steph is he's so present in social media. He's got 25 million people on Instagram, and he's regularly communicating. His wife, who's, you know, pretty prolific on Instagram. So there's a different sort of creative challenge. It's like the audience kind of knows, like they feel like they already know you. Tom, what was really an advantage to us was the scarcity. Like nobody had ever been inside.
Yeah.
And that drove so much fascination with him. People only knew one version of him, you know, the elite quarterback, but they'd never been on the inside. So in that way, I'd say this was tougher because it's like, how do I tell this in a way where something fresh?
Is the similarity with, say, a Brady and a Steph, people, despite Brady's greatness, have doubted him. Steph Curry went to Davidson. Did you sense the chip on the shoulder? Is
for
that
sure.
What drives him?
I mean, I think, yes, absolutely. So there's always been this sort of David versus Goliath type of thing, you know, this ruining the game. Now it's like his new thing. Like people have always sort of doubted him at every stage of his, when he was a little kid, he was too small. Then he couldn't get into like the big time programs. Then he kind of dropped in the draft. Two other guys, you know, got drafted, two other point guards got drafted.
Johnny
ahead of him.
Flynn and Ricky Rubio.
I mean, just think about
team.
That. Yeah. And so that's always, and so that chip is still on his shoulder. You know, people sort of say, hey, like, who's the guy on this team? And, you know, even on this current Warriors team. So I think, and that's in by and large with elite athletes like Tom, like Steph, they always need to find that edge, especially when they've been so successful. Like, how do you keep it going? You know, you mentioned Michael Strahan. Like, Michael Strahan always told me, at the end, I retired because not physically I couldn't do it, because mentally I couldn't find that thing to help motivate me. Tom, 42 years old, is still somehow finding that thing to motivate him, and Steph as well.
I think I was one of the things that was fascinating with Brady is how, and I don't like this word, I don't think it really, it means much, but I'll use the word normal. Tom had a fairly pedestrian American life, despite his wealth, supermodeling claim. Smoothies, watching film, into his job and kids. You know, he's not a jet setter as much, although they have their Costa Rica stuff. But there was a certain... there was a certain middle American ethos or suburban ethos to it. With Steph, I've always felt he's as normal as a superstar can be.
Yeah.
Am I wrong there?
No, you know, Steph's the real deal. It's like almost like as a storyteller, as a journalist, you come in with a natural skepticism.
Right.
You're looking for vulnerability. You're looking for conflict. You're looking for something that doesn't seem right so you can get under that and expose it in some ways. Steph is like, it's the real deal. And like his family is such a big part, and they're always there. Like his parents are such a part of his life still, you know, at every game. His, you know, yeah, just like everything, you know, is authentic. It feels really like real, and that's refreshing and inspiring in a way. Like, you know, this greatness has a foundation that is, you know, very real.
Gautam Chopra, Tiger's dad wasn't famous before we knew Tiger. Joe Montana's dad wasn't. You know, you can go back to Koufax, Mickey Mantle, Tom Brady. your dad was and Steph's dad was.
Yeah.
So when you have strong fathers, did you ever, during the Steph documentary, think, I kind of know where he's going on this family thing, because you had a very strong point of view father raising you.
Yeah, there's definitely that connection and that similarity. And Steph and I have kind of talked about that also. But there also is, like, you know, again, looking for that edge in a way. Like, Steph grew up with a very different type of pressure than, say, LeBron. There's so many archetypes. And, like, there's the single parent version, like, lift yourself with your bootstraps. LeBron is that archetype.
Yes.
Steph is the other archetype, is, like, growing up again, a relative privilege, you know.
BMW, you know.
But now that comes with an expectation. Oh, you must be soft. You must, your dad, you know, and his parents sort of talk about that. Like that's what people chanted when he was in high school. Daddy can't help you, sort of thing.
Wow.
So now there was, like, that was his thing. Oh, now I got to prove myself, because everybody has a certain expectation of me. And so you find that to be, and I mean, I relate to that for sure.
Yeah. Did you learn something? Was there something there, a surprising tidbit? And I'll, like, for instance, Tom Brady, there were a couple of things that I was like, kind of wow moments. Maybe you had one with Tom. Was there a wow Steph moment?
I think the wow Steph moment in general is, like, you would think for this type of excellence on the basketball court, in my opinion, greatest shooter of all time, that there's, like, there's a anatomy to that underneath. There's, like, such a consistency. You go to Steph's house after the game, it's like chaos. I mean, three little kids, a wife who's, you know, having her career defining moment right now. It's like a train station. Like, there's so much. He's not worried about, like, shoot around the next day. He's worrying about getting the kids to sleep, getting them to school in the morning. Early in the season when we were working on this, Aisha, his wife, she's doing her own. She's got a new show coming out on ABC. So she was here in LA, like, taping for, like, 3 weeks. He was, like, Mr. Mom at the same time that he was trying to get the season started. And then he had dealt with an injury. Then there was, like, team stuff. And it was just, like, so much going on that, like, it was interesting to sort of see, like, there's no moment to kind of evaluate this thing. There's just react to it.
Every sport has a different culture. I talked about this earlier. There's a masculinity to hockey and football. You don't flop and you play hurt.
Yeah.
In basketball, in soccer, the soccer star, the NBA star, you flop. There's a finesse. There's an art to it. You would never play hurt. Don't risk the injury unless it's the finals, right?
Right.
And, you know, I wonder with Steph being a star, he did something that was very rare. Hey, KD, you could be better than me. Join us.
Yeah.
That is unheard of in the NBA. I mean, it's just fascinating to me. And I think it separates him from even LeBron, even Michael, the willingness to go there. Does dad get credit? Are there nights where he gets tired of hearing, you know, KD's better than you, actually?
I think it's another source of motivation for him. You know, like, whose team is this? You know, who defines the culture of this team? He and KD are, no question, they're close.
They are close.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're teammates, and they've had this level of success. You can't have that without having a chemistry. It doesn't mean they agree on everything. It doesn't mean, like, there aren't flare-ups across an 82 game. Although I would say with Steph, like, he's so balanced, I'm not sure. He's sort of the peacemaker that comes in.
It feels like that.
Yeah, like, that helps resolve. And I think the team, the leadership on the team, the coaching staff, management leans on him for that. Like, they can only do so much, you know, from a management perspective. They need who's the insider, who's the embedded guy, like, on the bench or in the locker room.
Yeah.
So they depend on him. But yeah, I think Steph is still very competitive, and he made sacrifices for sure to bring in KD because he's a bigger picture guy. He's lived in the league almost like his entire life, and he knows how are guys defined. At the end, it's about how much they win, not how much, you know, what was their statistics. And so, you know, I think they also all have some perspective right now. It's like, no matter what happens, this is probably the end of this team. Free agency, cap stuff, all of that sort of thing. Like, you just can't do it forever. And so take advantage of this moment. And again, I think that's where he's able to put his ego, which is probably relatively smaller than everyone else's in the league, aside, but also for a bigger quest.
An award-winning filmmaker, Gautam Chopra, author-filmmaker, grants us a couple of interviews a year, and I absolutely love it. Tom Brady and Steph Curry do not need Gautam Chopra to chronicle their life. How do you convince them to get inside the walls of privacy?
I mean, it's a function of time, first and foremost. With, you know, Tom, I had the luxury of many years. I'd known him for many years beforehand. You know, what's cool now is, like, there's a credibility. It's like, I've worked with Kobe, then, you know, worked with Tom, even LeBron on a different project. And so, like, that, there's an implicit trust. Like, well, if those guys could do it, I can do it. But then it's just, like, spending time. It's getting to know the family. It's not just, like, you show up one day and everybody's, like, up for, you know, up, like, just kind of opens the doors to you. It's a function of time. And it's also like, it's a very different approach. I'm not like a reporter coming in to do something on Steph. I'm like, hey, Steph, what is the part of your life you want to share, you're willing to share? You know, like, what's a story you want to tell right now that's going on in your life? And so it's a partnership, I would say, more than like I'm doing something on one of these guys.
You know, it's so interesting. You mentioned Kobe and LeBron. I'm going to throw a theory at you. And this could be totally wrong. But I've believed this my entire life. And sometimes it gets me in trouble that dads matter.
Yeah.
Even strong, frustrating dads are valuable.
Sure.
LeBron did not grow up with the classic father figure. I felt this year with LeBron, and I felt this in you did shut up and dribble.
Yeah.
I don't want my athletes to shut up and dribble. But I did feel there was, LeBron was seeking external validation this year more than most. By the way, MJ, strong father, right, never really sought it. Kobe, again, enigmatic relationship, stronger father. Yeah. And I looked at LeBron and I thought, LeBron needs me to believe, hey, I drink wine, I get politics, I get business. And my takeaway is, yeah, I know you're smart. I've seen your whole career. Yeah. I know you're... Is that a crazy theory? LeBron, to me, is fascinating. Number one, he grew up in an enigmatic, chaotic life, and we've never had any problems with him. It's almost unbelievable. Yeah. Statistically, he's a complete anomaly.
Yeah.
Secondly, this year, this external validation thing, am I overreaching? Am I giving it too much thought? What...
Well, I mean, I can't say, I certainly don't know LeBron the way I know Steph now, or Tom, or those guys, but LeBron is unique in terms of, like, I have spent time, obviously, with him. He was a big part of Shut Up and Dribble. I interviewed with him, and he's so on it. He's so sharp. Like, when you're sitting down with him, he knows, he figures out within the first 60 seconds, or what are you, oh, let me give it to you. What are you interested in? And so, yeah, there's that. But I think, you know, he needed a new challenge. I think he's looking for something, you know, out there. He's still so committed and loves basketball, but there's all these other things. I mean, you can't be doing what he's been doing since the age of 14. So much is coming at you. Everyone wants you. He's curious. You know, we forget, like, sometimes you're with LeBron and you're like, yeah, he's 34, but he feels like he's 54.
Yeah.
But he's 34. I mean, and he's been so focused on this one thing. And yeah, he's curious about the world. And yeah. I think, you know, LA is a place that services that curiosity for sure.
By the way, I just throw that out there. I'm not saying I'm right, but I find the psychology of LeBron fascinating. And by the way, I would tell his friend Maverick Carter, who I know, I would tell him the same thing. I'd say, I'm going to throw something at you. Tell me if I'm a goofball. You know, David Falk was a legendary attorney and then kind of ran the NBA for years. He tells a story about Michael Jordan, and I always feel this is where LeBron and Michael Jordan are very similar. At one point, when Michael came into the league, Magic was seen as the team guy and Michael as the individual star.
Mm-hmm.
And David Falk and Nike proposed to Michael Jordan. This was a lot of money back then. They said, we're going to give you $1 million to play Magic one-on-one. And David Falk and Nike thought it was brilliant. And Michael, within a minute, said, this is an awful idea. He goes, if I lose, I'm no longer the team guy or better than Michael. It kills my brand. And Falk and Nike in the moment said, oh, God, we're idiots. Michael knows his brand better than anybody.
For sure.
LeBron really, really knows. They said to us about Howard Stern. Nobody knows Howard's audience like Howard. He knows what they like and don't like. I feel like LeBron really knows his fans, which I am one. I just thought there was a detour this year, and it was off-putting. I thought he got so into business. Now, by the way, do Kobe and LeBron have similarities to you?
Yeah, I mean, drive to be the best. And not just in basketball, you know? Like,
really?
I mean, look at what Kobe's doing now. I mean, it's amazing. He's won an Oscar.
Incredible.
He's a New York Times bestseller. You know, I'd say LeBron, you know, what's unique about LeBron is he's kind of, up until this year anyway, like doing both at the same time, you know, excelling in business and, you know, continuing to be excellent on the court, you know, with the Cavs. I mean, look, there's a lot of things that happened this year in LA. And, you know, I was at that Christmas Day game, like, you know, like they were in good shape and then he got hurt.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a 34-year-old athlete. Like, it's tough. And then other guys got hurt, you know, it's just like, but they were, and you're talking to a Celtics fan. I was not exactly rooting for that, but like, I was impressed. And then the wheels came off.
Finally, a question again on Steph Curry, author, filmmaker, Gautam Chopra, coming out, Stephen versus the Game premieres this Thursday on Facebook Watch, Steph's Curry, the journey on and off the court. If today, Kevin Durant texts Steph Curry, I'm leaving, how would it land on him? How do you think his 24 to 36 hour emotional window?
I mean, Steph is the most zen guy I've ever met, first of all.
What do you mean?
I mean, so I always joke with him, you know, he wears his faith on his sleeve. He's very Christian. It's yes. Very devoted. But I always tell him, I'm like, no, man, you're Buddhist. Like, you are so zen. Nothing seems to affect you. Like, win, a loss. Like, he's just so chill. Like, he doesn't overreact to any situation. I think Steph's not, you know, everybody knows what's coming in terms of free agency. So he's prepared for that. But I also think, you know, he's got a unique connection. When the time comes, and I don't know anything for sure, but just by being around KD, like, I literally don't think he's decided. I think he's one of those guys who's able to compartmentalize and focus on this challenge. When the time comes, Steph is somebody who understands historical context and was the reason, I think, largely KD's there. He'll have an argument to make to why he should stay. They know Jordan's got six and they're hopefully after this year, you know, pretty within striking distance. So I think Steph will make a compelling argument, but, you know, he'll also be prepared and fine and supportive of a friend if the friend decides he needs to go somewhere else. I mean, it's a business and these guys get it.
I know it's a hackneyed kind of term, the Mount Rushmore, but I always thought there's four guys that have the biggest difference makers in my life in the NBA. Magic saved the league. Michael made it global. LeBron made it mobile. And Steph revolutionized it. KD's just great. KD's just great.
I mean, there's no question in my mind in 10 years from now, we'll be like, LeBron, Michael, KD, like, you know, we'll be having that debate because I get to go to a lot of games right now. And I was at that game, he scored 50 or whatever against the Clippers a couple nights ago. It's like, I've never seen any, because also he's 6'10". You know, it's just
Did you hear after the game, Lou Williams and who were the two players that guarded him? They're like,
Patrick Beverley.
You know, we tried to stop him. Huh. Do you media guys get that we're trying to stop him here? We just can't.
Steph says it, I think it's in the second episode, he calls him a basketball savant, and he's like, you're just around this guy in practice, and you see him trying things, and you're like, wait, he can get better like than this? Like, and that's Steph Curry, one of the greatest of all time, saying, this guy's on another level, you know?
Okay, so Facebook, it drops tomorrow.
Yes.
Okay, give it the title again.
Stephen versus the Game.
Premieres Facebook. How many parts?
It'll be 6 episodes.
Honor to have you on the show.
Thank you. I love it here.